From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stanziano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good. You're looking good in the Sherpa today. You changed up the wardrobe. How you doing, brother?
Always making it happen, big man. Thanks for recognizing. You know, the Sherpa is my jam. I'm looking good. I know I'm looking good today, but anyways, we have a very special guest today. Today's guest is a real estate maven hailing from Spain. I think this is the first time we had someone from Spain on the show, Gino. This is interesting. She spent her childhood absorbing real estate by watching her father. Later, she earned a master's degree in law, specializing in alternative dispute settlement. Not practicing law anymore, so we allowed her on the show. We typically don't allow lawyers on, but it's okay. We've kind of made sure everything's okay today, so we're there. Today, she is a multifamily real estate expert with the agency Beverly Hills. So without further ado, Barbara Isabel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. How are you doing today?
Doing great.
Doing great. Really happy you got out of the legal side of things, and you know, you're just coming into, you know, the world of real estate. So please share with us your background a little bit more, and ultimately how you made that full transition into real estate.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Madrid in Spain. I moved to LA about 8 years ago, just under 8 years ago. I was really thinking about coming to, you know, to LA with my master's degree, and then, you know, going back to Spain. There is no other place in the world like Spain. But
what is it that makes Spain unlike anywhere else?
Food, quality of people, quality of life, lifestyle. So many things that go in the day-to-day life. You know, like people being more genuine. People, you know.
Well, you're in LA. I mean, of course it's going to feel like that. Right?
yeah, pretty much. And then, you know, again, in Spain, like there's a saying here, like, you know, if you're from Europe or, you know, Spain, like, you know, the question is like, hey, what's your name? Like, you know, where are you from? Here is like, hey, what do you do? So, you know, that's just the intro question. And that, I think that explains it pretty well. You know,
I've never heard that before, but that says a lot.
Oh, it's definitely true. You know, it's so what do you do before they even ask your name?
What can I get from you, Barbara?
Yeah. What can you get from me? Real estate advice. That's what you can get from me.
She's transitioned really well, Jake. She's picked up the American vibe real quick, brother.
LA would jade you quickly, right?
Oh, yeah. There is no, this is not a playground. You know what I mean? So, you gotta catch up to it. So I moved here. I did my Master of Law, and I started practicing law at a law firm in Century City, Greenberg, Glasgow. You know, real estate department. It was nice. It was great. Brought a couple, you know, nice high-end clients. The law firm made, you know, significant money with those two clients, and I received a $2,000 bonus. So I got very discouraged with the whole thing. Realized that, you know, and the law career here is very corporate. So, you know, I had a very outgoing personality. You know, I grew up with my father, you know, shadowing his business, the business of construction in Spain mainly. But he used to also build hospitals in South Africa and Botswana. So I used to go to South Africa every summer. So, you know, it was just kind of like part of my day-to-day life. Never really thought about pursuing it until I met another developer here in LA. And, you know, old guy in his 90s, very well known in Beverly Hills. And he was like, hey, like, have you thought about doing something else? I can see you, you know, killing it in a different sector. And I was like, well, you know, I've already done 8 years of law between my undergrad, my grad and everything. He was like, well, you know, I think it would be good chance for you to like succeed if you were to like do something in real estate. And I was like, hey, you know, my concept of real estate was like the reality TV shows. You know, I don't want anyone getting into my personal life. I'm a businesswoman. That's, you know, what I want to do. I got approached to do some reality TV before in real estate, but, you know, I just don't like the drama aspect of it. I like the drama aspect of my business, you know, dealing with tenants, evictions, squatters, police, like all those fun stuff that comes with doing real estate development. And then eventually got into real estate, started cold calling, got some high-end listing. Every time I got a listing appointment in person, I closed the listing. So I was, you know, kind of very encouraged by that. especially because of my accent and my look. I look young. And especially back then, 6 years ago, I was, 26, 25. So everyone thought I was 12. They were like, do you even know LA? Like, where do you come from? But I got comfortable.
Well, in the apartment space too, there's not a ton of women, at least in it. I think there's more today than there was 10 years ago, but you know, it was pretty male dominated for a long time. And
still to date, I would say still to date, it's not really, I mean, again, it depends on how you approach your business, but on a day-to-day basis, it's not a fun business to be in when it comes to development. You deal with a lot of, you know, nasty contractors. And they get nasty. They get in your face. They don't care whether you're a girl or not. So, you know, you just have to have a little bit more thick skin.
Really? I haven't experienced that in my life. So that must just be an LA thing. They're meaner on the West Coast. Yeah, I mean, you know?
they really get in your face. But, you know, again, you Chivalry just have to stay in your lane. You know, you just have to stay in your lane. You just have to, like, you know, remember why you're doing it. Again, the money is good. But if you're not passionate about what you do, it's very difficult to be in this business 365, because this is a 365. The buildings are going up. You know, the AC breaks down, there is a leak. You have to, you know, you have to really monitor all your projects, or at least I do. So I'm not like, you know, the standard traditional realtor. I sell you the deal, make my money and, you know, be out of the deal. I help my clients from A to C, you know, planning with permitting, planning, you know, shutting off water meters. If there's squatters in the property, making sure that they don't establish a home. So I call the police, you know, try to get them out, negotiate cash for keys, all those fun things, you know, that go into development. So
you ever just chase them out yourself?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Nice.
I've done it a couple times and it reversed on me both times. So I've been advised not to do that by the police a couple times already. They are like, you know, I mean, I understand that you feel very strong about yourself, but these people don't care. Like, you know, they may have a knife, they may get aggressive, you know? So, you know, yes, I guess learning as I go. You know,
one more difference between LA and Tennessee. They come at you with a knife. We come at you with a gun. And that's the reality. The reality is come and bring it.
You charge a gun, you run from a knife.
Isabel, I wanted to ask you a question. My family's from Italy. I get a little insulted when you say Madrid is the best place in the world to live. I would venture to say Italy.
I did say Europe, though. No, I did say Europe after I said Spain.
Okay. I missed that, guys. I've never been to Barcelona. I've never been to Barcelona. I've never been to Madrid. I've been to Italy 20 times. I mean, I just went there back in August. And honestly, you're absolutely correct. It's one of the most amazing places to live if you have money and you can afford to live there. What did your parents, your father say specifically when you said, Papa, nos vemos. Yo tengo andar en America. Tengo andar a trabajar ahí. Ciao. What did he say to you? Because that's something where your family, the family life in Europe is really strong. The roots are really strong there. What did dad say to you?
Well, I always wanted to do a master's degree in the United States of America. You know, that was like just a dream that I had. You know, I guess like growing up, my mom like always, you know, admired America and the culture. And, you know, as you know, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of like big companies came out of here. So, you know, I always had like this idea of the States being, you know, a completely different world. Even though I traveled a lot, you know, I traveled throughout Europe, South America, Asia, you know, I grew up traveling. So, you know, I have no complaints when it comes to that. So I knew there was a whole world out there, but we just never made it to the States with my dad because he didn't speak English. He was old school. You know, I was the seventh of eight kids. So he was more of an older dad. And he just, you know, had no interest in the States. Like, what's there to see? You know what I mean? So I always had that dream of, hey, I really want to explore that part of the world as well. So I didn't choose LA. I chose the university. So Pepperdine University for 12 consecutive years at that time. Now I think it's like 17 years in a row. They were known for being the best at having this alternative dispute settlement. So basically for me, I was fascinated by it when I learned about it in Norway during the conference. So, you know, instead of going to court, you have these mediators, arbitrators, so that you have a chance of being heard instead of just having 30 seconds in front of the judge. So I found it very interesting and I just wanted to learn about it. And Pepperdine was the best university for that. So I applied. The first year, my dad was like, oh, I don't think I want you to leave. So I, you know, I didn't take the opportunity. And then on the second year, I applied again and I got a full scholarship. So he had no way of saying no. You know what I mean? At that point, it was like, hey, I already have my money saved. I know if I need money, they are going to give me the money. You know, because when it comes to education, they were all the school. They just wanted me to learn and be educated. You know, it was a very traditional way of growing up. Mm-hmm. So I said, hey, here's the paperwork. I got a scholarship. You know, I just need to pay for my accommodation and, of course, living expenses. So he was very sad, you know, obviously he was like, you know, I don't want you to go. He was sick at the time as well. He was going through this 6 year of having cancer. So he was like, you know, I don't really, I'm not sure I want you to do this. And I say, hey, it's going to be 9 months and I will be right back. And I moved here. And then 7 months later, he passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was actually, it's an interesting story, not to get a little, you know, personal about it. But yeah, on Christmas was my first Christmas that I spent without my parents in a long time. And come January, he sent me a text and he said like, hey, I miss you dearly this Christmas. When is your spring break? And I said, oh, March, you know, 9th to March 15th or whatever. So he bought me the ticket on January 5th to go visit him in March. And he passed away 24 hours before I took the plane. So I literally arrived to his funeral. Yeah, that's the true story. That was crazy.
How was it growing up in a big family? I've got 6 kids myself. So how was it with having 8 siblings, 7 siblings?
It was amazing. You know, it was amazing. Like whoever says otherwise is not true. You know what I mean? It's very different. You get used to dealing with different personalities and different people. And I think it like overall, it like, you know, makes you a better you because again, every single one of my siblings is different. With some of them, I get along very well. With some of them, I, you know, I don't really need to see them more than once a year.
Your dad doesn't want to hear that.
So, well, again, you know, it's just learning to deal with different personalities, which I think is a huge plus for anybody.
So you're in the U.S. You're an attorney. You're like, deep down, this is not what I thought it would be. This is just great. I understand law. When did you get your first taste of multifamily? Because you're going out there doing real estate residential listings. When was it that like there's this vehicle out there? And I think a lot of people in California don't know about it because there's a lot of single family homes and they get onto HGTV and they see all the crap on the shows and the thing fixing and flipping. What about multifamily?
A common occurrence that can happen. And so every time I would, you know, list a single family house, you know, and I would get a little personal with the homeowners, especially when it comes to, you know, the high end listings, you know, multi-million dollar homes, they all don't multifamily real estate, or they were somehow some way involved in it. Oh, like that's a little project here. Maybe they had 4, maybe they had 5. And I was like, okay, I mean, first of all, they are buying these properties. Some of them, very few people really build them. A lot of people buy like retail, meaning like, you know, the product just ready and stabilized. You know, they look at the cap rate and that's all they care about. Some people buy location. But, you know, there was a common occurrence that all these people with money had, you know, passive income. And it's not necessarily passive income. I don't mean necessarily cash flowing every month because, again, sometimes, you know, you lose money the first 5-6 years or you don't really make money. Because you believe in, you know, the long run of the asset. But I was like, okay, there is definitely something here where I could be selling them instead of one property a year, maybe 5 or 6 properties a year. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like what piqued my curiosity. And then eventually I met, you know, 2 brothers who are from New York, known developers in LA. When I say known, I mean, you know, in the development sector. And they are medium developers. They don't build 500 apartment buildings, 300 or 200. We stick to anything that's anywhere between, I would say, you know, 2 to 50 units. But we have right now under construction 42 of them. And, you know, I help manage all of that. So, mm-hmm. you know, that specific family bought of me 26 deals last year. So, you know, I realized that there was a huge opportunity for that. And how I got in the business, you know, I was like, hey, here's a property that I think is a good asset. It was obviously for land value. It was a single family house and they were like, okay, like, why is this a good asset? So then I started, you know, connecting with architects and kind of learning about zoning and setbacks and easements and encroachments and all this fun stuff. And I was able to put a deal that makes sense for them. They bought it for $625. They built 4 units. Once it was built, I helped rent the 4 units. Actually, right now, one is becoming vacant, so I'm going to be renting it again. And that was the first of many. And that's how I started. And then word of mouth. You know, when you're selling something to somebody that people know, they start calling you and asking you for deals.
So, Gino, I got to jump in here for a second because it sounds like she's working a lot harder than brokers in the Southeast. And I want to, sure. I've actually been fascinated in trying to unpack this the entire time. So we're going to play a game right now. I'm going to tell you what I think you're doing, and then you can tell me if it's correct.
I like games. Let's play a game on the show. Yeah. All
and,
right,
and,
brother.
And I'll tell you, like, so, you know, and look, this is the first time we spoke or whatever. So Gino and I are obviously, we own apartments in the Southeast. And we buy a 100-unit complex, we renovate it and hold it. That's sort of what we do. The brokers find an asset, that someone wants to sell, you know, built in 1980s, they sell it to us. Like, that's what they do. They don't do much more than that. Some of them do, right? And I'm not hating. I'm just saying that's typical, you know, broker transactions.
Well, 99% of realtors.
Yeah. Right. And so it sounds like you identify a piece of land or an asset, look to redevelop it potentially, work with the new ownership throughout, and then you lease it out after that. Yes. So it sounds like there's a lot more going on there than here it is, I'm going to list it and give it to you. It sounds like you're very hands-on throughout an entire process and actually involved in the redevelopment. Is this correct in terms of what I'm hearing? And elaborate if there's more, please.
Yes. And the reason for that is this: the opportunity that comes with doing all of that. So yeah. Not only I get the leases on the way out or the sale, obviously, you know, like right now we have a property in North Hollywood that I sold them the land. When I say the land, I mean a single family house. There is very little land in LA, but you just buy single family homes. They bought it for $1.2 million. It was like, you know, nice piece of land, 9,000 square feet. We demolished it, built 6 units. Now I'm selling it for $4.2 million. I'm putting it on the market this week. So again, I help with blue tape when the property is built, go there, touch ups, dealing with, you know, HVAC, whatever needs to be done, lead the city, final inspections.
Do you get paid for that part of the process as well?
No.
That's a lot of extra service and work there. Yeah.
But the good thing about it is they are like loyalty goes both ways.
Sure.
So when they get, you know, they get it, obviously, you know, they are growing their business. I'm growing mine. But at the same time, you know, if you're a little bit of a savvy realtor, you know how to identify who the buyer is when you have someone with so much business. So they try, you know, calling them, selling them deals. And the first thing they do when any realtor in the city of LA, which is not, you know, it's not a city with a very few realtors. We have a lot here. Send them deals. They send it to me directly. And they're like, deal with this person.
I love this so much because to me, that's the definition of a growth mindset. And so many people you interact with nowadays don't see the bigger picture. You see the bigger picture and that's why you're doing that. And it makes sense for you. So many people are like, are you paying for me? Are you paying me to do that? Are you doing it? And it's like, they don't see.
I had this conversation with, you know, I just joined another firm. So I'm not at the agency anymore.
Yeah.
I just joined a different one because I was able to have my own DVA that I've been working on for a very long time. It's called Bartierra Group. That's the name that, you know, I just came up with. Bar from my name, Tierra in Spanish means land, so Bartierra Group. I'm planning, you know, on building my team and doing a bunch of fun stuff. But I was talking to this guy who's, you know, younger than me, but he's doing really well in the commercial sector. And he just gets a lot of off-market residential properties because they have cold callers out of state. So, you know, he met me last week. We had a great conversation and he was like, hey, like, you know, I know that you're very hands-on. Like, I can tell that, you know, what you're doing. Like, have you thought about your, you know, time value of money, opportunity cost, all these things? And I was like, listen, I appreciate everything you're saying and I'm aware of it. It's not that, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm, you know, for me, this is an opportunity to not only like my clients, it's an opportunity to learn the business.
And separate yourself from the pack because the rest of them, I'm going to start saying hateful things.
I would say one of the biggest value propositions that I have to my clients this day is everything that comes with dealing with like new city ordinances, like the SB8. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. SB8 basically it changed the landscape of development like 180. It's an absolutely crazy thing that happened in LA last year. So as of January 1st, 2022, you know, traditionally speaking, 2021 and the years before, everything we cared about was the zoning, what the property is zoned for, and the size of the lot. With that, you could figure out how many units you can build by right. Mm-hmm. Now that landscape has changed. So with this new SBA, if you have a property on site that's existing that has 2-bedroom and is tenant occupied and they make the income that they've made for the 5 last consecutive years is under, even if it's just one of the 5. One of those years is under the medium income for the zip code, the city has a schedule, then you have to designate one of your new units to low income, meaning that in a 2-bedroom, instead of getting $3,500, I'm going to get $700 a month. So as you know, that kills the cap rate. And obviously, we're looking probably at about $200,000 less for the same property. Wow. So it's a very complicated thing, not just the process, but also the application takes, you know, the turnaround for the housing department is about 6 months. Which of course we can do faster escrows as we used to do 30-day closings. However, you know, again, because I've been doing it with the city for about 3 years now and I had a good relationship with them before, my turnaround for this thing is about 5 to 6 weeks, which is something that very few people can offer. So that's how I'm able to do 2-3 month close, you know?
And what Jake is talking about, I know sometimes Jake gets a little aggressive with brokers, but let me reframe what he's trying to say. It's a low barrier to entry to get it becoming a real estate broker. You take 22 hours, you get in there. Nobody's there really training you. The Remaxes of the world, I mean, the Keller Williams of the world, they have really great trainings, but not a lot of companies have great trainings. So you get in and you're really there selling, but no one ever tells you how to provide value. If you're listing a house, you should have a list of contractors. You should have a list. You should be able to walk them through that closing. And how are you providing value for that 5% or 6% commission that you're going to get for the house? They're not being thought of, and they're not being programmed to be entrepreneurs. They're thinking of just as being salespeople. That's the real difference. And unfortunately, it's not 80-20, the Pareto rule. It's the 95-5 in real estate, because when times are really good, you don't really have to do that much. You put a house on the market and 2 weeks later it sells. But as things slow down, now there's a lot more inventory. There's a lot less capital to be invested in. And now they have to go to work. And the ones who have been able to build their business and have been through a couple of market cycles understand how to deliver the value. And that's what Barbara has figured out at such a young age within her first market cycle, is how do I give Jake over there value? How do I create value for him? I don't have to charge him on this one, but on the third and fourth deal, possibly he's going to have a deal. He'll call me before anybody else gets the opportunity, and that's how I get paid. I'm deferring the gains today, and it's like investing in multifamily. You may not get paid today, but if you hold the property for 3, 4, 5 years, by year five, you're raking it in. So it's really adopting that mindset. And you know, for you, how else are you providing? Or if I'm a real estate agent on here listening to this, how do I build my book of business? How do I provide value to my clients?
Well, you mentioned a very good point. So when you get your license, again, it's a very, you know, the requirements are very basic. Not only brokerages don't teach you like how to run your business or how to do your business, they also don't really teach you how to source leads. Like they don't really teach you anything when it comes to real estate. So, you know, that was one of my struggles when I first started, until I met literally one agent on the street that, oh, I like this thing called Vulcan 7 or Mojo, which are you basically just systems that you pay $200-$300 a month, which back then I was like, oh my God, $300 a month I have to pay for this cold calling thing, better be worth it. You know, if I close one deal, it's going to be worth for the year. But yes, you know, like even those simple basic things like that, like there is not really like a set path where, like, you know, you get your license and then they teach you how to get leads. And once you get the lead, they walk you through the process of, you know, what is an escrow. To me, escrow was amazing. I mean, we don't have escrow. We don't have third party escrow companies in Europe. Like, it was such an amazing concept. So I had a very hard time understanding what escrow was, you know, a little like that. But again, you know, you just have to learn. So one of the things that I'm doing right now with, you know, the team that I'm building right now, I don't think there is any secret to what I do. I think you just need to be consistent, and you just need to want it enough to the point that you understand that you have to invest time and resources and get to where you want to be. So for me, every single agent that I'm training, I have three junior agents that I've, you know, been training consistently. You know, they have the opportunity of their lifetimes, and I'm still paying them for their time, which is something that no other agent does. I pay them a very small hourly rate, and I have them, you know, lead generating and walking them through the business and all the paperwork that I do in my business. This is a people's business. There is no way I can succeed in this alone. This is very simple. Like, there was a time earlier this year, there was a time earlier last year where I had 12 escrows going, me, myself, and I was really overloaded, because all those escrows, you know, require attention. This is not, oh, let's just, you know, sign the paperwork and walk through the escrow and we'll get it done. Like, you know, my clients want to negotiate extensions, price reductions, you know how developers are. So I have to go through all of that. So, you know, it was very difficult dealing with those 12 escrows, and that's why I had to hire help. And I, you know, fired more people than I kept. And that's just a fact, because, you know, they think they can do it. And when they realize that this is an everyday job, they just run. They run away. Mm-hmm. So my value proposition to other agents is, if you want to make it in real estate, you want to learn about multifamily, and you want to get to where I'm at in, you know, a short period of time, call me. Let's have a coffee. Let's talk about it. Let's see where your goals are. And if I can help you, I will help you. And if I can't, I will tell you. That's it.
I have two more questions before we go to the short answer. The first one, to you, Barbara, I like you call them assets. What is an asset to you? Like, what kind of assets are you focusing on for your investors?
So right now we are buying, we've changed the concept and the model of what we do. When I say what we do, I mean, you know, me and my primarily 2-3 big clients. We used to do mainly multifamily. So townhouses, duplexes style, put 2, 4, 6, however many we can put. Very important to say, we do not build what you can build by right. We do not maximize the density. We maximize the dollar. So if it makes sense to financially, you know, build one duplex less because of the cost of construction and, you know, how things fluctuate and rents and this and that, then that's what we do, which, you know, today has been a very good, you know, path to take. we haven't lost money in any deals, which is, again, something that we can pride ourselves on. That being said, we are also looking right now into building affordable housing. That's becoming a very big thing in the city of LA. We have several of those going. Timeline for construction is longer. Time for like plans and permits is longer, and the construction is way more expensive. But again, they are cash flowing beautifully, like way better than the multifamily assets.
That's awesome. And for me, the last question is, you could be in Madrid right now during siesta, having an espresso, hanging out, having a nice, easy life. But instead, you're in LA dealing with jerk contractors, traffic, smog, a lot of stress, building a business.
And there's a zombie population growing from the streets.
What is driving this? What is, as Simon Sinek likes to say, what is your why? Why are you doing this?
For two reasons. One, because I was born and raised a certain way, which I'm very grateful for. And I want to, you know, give myself that same life that I had growing up with my dad when, you know, I used to go to restaurants, and never until I was 25 and I moved to LA, I looked at prices. And, you know, again, some people may not like hearing this, but that's just how it is. You know, I grew up that way, and I appreciate the things that come with that life, because when I moved to LA and, you know, my dad passed away and I told my mom, don't worry, got it. I didn't really know what I was saying. You know, and then I went on.
I'm sure your dad would be very proud.
I went on in 2 years of, I think so. I hope so. But, you know, like the way I grew up is the way I want to like continue to live my life. And, you know, the ones to come after me, that's kind of like the plan. And then obviously I always felt that I had to make up for, you know, that moment that I wasn't there when my dad passed away. And I think that as I keep accomplishing little things in my life, like, you know, a month and a half ago, I bought my first property by myself outright. I got a big, big loan. But I just bought 4 units in Hollywood. So I own my first 4 doors, as we would say.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm, you know, I'm very proud of those little accomplishments, and I just want to, you know, I just want to be successful. I want to make money to invest in real estate. Again, I like buying purses and doing stuff like that, but I do that, you know, 2-3 times a year. You can only buy so many. Then I don't use them. So I just want to make money to invest in real estate. I want to have a great portfolio. I want to help people make money, because there is a way to make money in multifamily real estate in the city of LA, as opposed to what 90% of people say out there in the internet that is not true. So that's my why.
Thank you.
I know that there's a market for these purses a few years down the road, and some people view them as assets, but I think your direction going into the, you know, the townhomes or whatever you just bought is probably a lot smarter. So let's just
keep it. I agree with you. I don't know if it's a market down the road, and all these companies that are trying to resell these things are great, but I mean, it is what it is. Can only hold so much value, you know?
That's right. Let's take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from 0 units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, BuyRight, ManageRight, and FinanceRight.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Yield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from 0 to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey in multifamily.
All right, we are back, and this is my section where I I guess I'm going to bash on California a little bit. So it's your home state now. And for myself, grew up in New York. Okay. Just, you know, full transparency. Gino grew up in New York. I left for Tennessee. Gino left for Florida. And that's when we started our investing careers. And there was serious economic benefits from doing that. And I'm just going to say it like this. I don't know that California deserves your work ethic and hustle. I think there's an, and Gino, it was funny because he was joking about Madrid and things like this. Have you ever considered the Southeast or some of these other places where maybe there's not a state income tax and you could actually grow more wealth, be more successful with less regulations and restrictions and all the taxes that come with LA? Because that was a big reason for my exodus, you know, from New York. So have you considered that, or maybe a Miami, you know, or something like that, where, hey, they're not going to make it as hard on you from a governmental regulation standpoint?
I mean, not really, because the way I look at it, I'm a very risk adverse person, especially when it comes to investing my money and my clients' money. We know, which have, at the end of the day, I vouch for their money. You know, they are investing millions of dollars with me. I know the LA market. I don't know any other market, but you know, just looking at cycles and those fun things that people, you know, like talking about, high highs, low lows. So Miami is great. I've been to Miami recently, and it's absolutely insane what they are doing there, how much money they are pouring into all these projects. I'm scared for them. I'm not gonna say it otherwise, because I am. I mean, when I see all these people invest hundreds of millions of dollars in Miami, like I don't know where this is going. It's, they are creating a bubble the way I look at it. My concern with other markets, not California or not LA specifically, California is very big, but is that, you know, we're very consistent. Like, you know, the market went down right now when the interest rates went up. We were looking at the 10-12% down, but, you know, all of our deals have still made, you know, very, very good profit. So I know this market. I don't know any other markets, but my main concern again has always been high highs, low lows. Like all those markets go up, go down, and they fluctuate a lot more than Los Angeles does. I would say it's a very steady
style. I don't know about that. You know, because you see some highs. Like I feel like the coasts, and I'm insulated a little bit. I'm, you know, in Tennessee. You know, I think if you see like back to 08, you know, the run ups were typically on the coasts, and then the deep depression, and then the run back up. So agree to disagree, but just think about it as your career develops. I think there may be, you know, other opportunities
again,
out
I'm
there
open,
for you.
I'm open to, you know, I'm open to learn. I don't think any other state, maybe New York, I'm not sure, but I don't know if any other state is more complicated than LA. Like they really make it difficult on us. You know what I mean?
That's my point, where you could go somewhere else and your life probably gets a lot easier with less, you know.
And I like Barbara.
I like the returns.
I would stay away. This is me personally. I would stay away from Miami. But what I would say about Miami is when Jeff Bezos is moving there, when all the hedge funds are moving there, there is so much capital moving there.
That's right.
But there's opportunities in North Florida. There's opportunities in the central part of Florida. It's a behemoth. The demographics show that people that are older are moving there because of the weather. We have a $21 billion surplus in the state, and we have no state income tax. So as long as the government continues to run the way it does, we'll be okay. If we sort of flip, then it may be an issue. But the way it's being run currently, it's really well. But I agree with you. Miami is absolutely – there is going to be a boom and bust. I'm not disagreeing with you on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I have a few friends who are like have been. You know, for the last 10, 12 years developing in Florida, in like North Florida. And you know, I mean, I don't know how else to say other than they are printing money, literally.
They buy
these, like, you know, they bought these big pieces of land, subdivided the land, and then they are building these small homes that they built for 130 and they sell for 220. And they are selling 20 a month. It's absolutely insane. They are printing money. So now I'm helping them lease a $75,000 per month house. So that's nice.
I like that.
Finding your place. So if I heard you correctly, you're recruiting people to join your team right now. Is that right?
Yes, always. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what's that look like starting out with you? You sit down, you talk about it. I mean, what's the path look like in the beginning for these people?
So it looks like, you know, you're going to learn as fast as much as you want to. So I'm not opposed to people coming with me in the car and driving around with me when I go to all these construction sites, or when I go to the housing department or the city or all those things. Like, you're going to learn as fast as you want. The most valuable thing to me right now, and, you know, obviously the way they give me value, is by helping me with all my paperwork, my emails, like making sure that I don't miss a thing. Like, you know, having my timelines written down, contingency removals on all my escrows, stuff like that. So again, I can explain to them what an escrow is. I can explain to them how to find deals, what looks like a good deal. Everything I really ask in exchange is for them to remain loyal to me for as long as they can. They are going to make money and they are going to learn. So, I mean, other than that,
you're going to teach them the business, though. This is the type of education that people actually make money from, not some, you know, silly degree in, you know, some kind of art history studies or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I want to listen. I can't do this alone. Like, you know, I understand that my business is a people business, not just when it comes to my clients, but when it comes to other agents. There's a lot of value in partnering with other agents who, you know, are hungry and they want to hustle. And, you know, it's just a great value proposition for anybody who's looking to learn about real estate. Like, learn about this aspect of real estate. This is the actual, you know, one that's going to give you 30, 40, 50 checks a year. Again, I just started collecting passive income. I'm not going to really be cash flow positive for a little bit until I refinance. But when it comes to like my income, you know, I have guaranteed income every month, pretty much, with all the projects that I've been a part of that I have lined up and all the commissions that I'm making as we call on the way out. Like, you know, I could lay back and be fine for a couple of years if I wanted to.
I don't see you doing that, though. The pipeline is full. The pipe is full. Yeah. What project are you excited about right now?
Well, the one I purchased, I'm remodeling two of the units.
So now you're doing design work as well. Is that, I'm hearing that? Or?
Yeah, like, I mean, not major remodel. It's already not major remodel, but I'm just kind of like personalizing it a little bit, and I get a little bit more, you know, emotional even with the contractors. I'm like, come on, put un poquito de amor, you know, like put a little bit of love into this one. This is my own, you know. so definitely seeing a different side when it comes to you know, doing something that where I have my own money invested. But honestly, it doesn't change much for the way I treat, like, you know, my clients' projects. Like, you know, the only reason I'm able to do this is because of them. You know, if they didn't trust me and, you know, they didn't let me use the resources, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. So definitely that
one is a great outlook.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like again, it's very valuable right now. I just closed on a $2.5 million house in Culver City representing buyer and seller. So that was a 4.5% commission. It was nice, sweet, quick deal. And it was, you know, when I closed, the girl was like, hey, I need a painter. I need an electrician. You know, I have this problem with the city, like a code enforcement violation. Sounds a lot worse than it is. It's very simple. But basically, because there is electrical in the garage that was not supposed to be there. So she's like freaking out. And I'm like, I got it. Easy. Let me deal with it. You know? So, again, it's just a great value proposition to learn about all these little things. I have access to all these contractors. So that one that I'm doing myself, that one I'm very excited about. And then I'm very excited about a couple affordable projects we have coming up. They are going to be cash flowing significantly. And, you know, as you guys probably know, like with affordable housing is state money. So the 80% of the rents are covered by the government regardless. So, you know, it's kind of guaranteed income. I'm very excited for two of those. There was one that we purchased that was the Chinese restaurant and a house next door. And we bought the whole thing. We demoed both and we're building 26 units. And I had the police out there a couple months ago because you know, we get squatters all the time on these little houses that are vacant. And I had the police out there and I was telling them so excited. I was like, you're not going to believe what we're building here. We're putting 26 units, affordable housing. I'm getting people off the streets. And the girl, the police officer goes, oh my God, this is terrible. I go, what do you mean? I go, this is great. He goes, first of all, the people who are in the streets want to be there because there are a lot of like shelters here that have like a lot of open capacity, but they just don't want to be in by 8 or they don't want to drink or they don't want to do drugs. And when you're telling me about 26 units, what I'm thinking, and this is what the police officer told me, and I found this so interesting. She was like, you are putting 26 people with 100 different personalities each. So we're going to be coming here.
They're going to get calls at the yes.
Because 26 people with 100 different personalities, so I know where I'm going to be spending the next few months. I was like,
that's your job.
Man, when you actually get the real, that's what I'm talking about there. So
crazy stuff. I mean, on it, this problem is really, it's incredible. The whole real drama that goes into dealing with the squatters. And I mean, you know, it's just really crazy. Like we've have had instances when, you know, people like overdose in the properties. It's really bad. It's really bad. Sure. It's crazy. Crazy stuff that happens out here. But again, you know, when I've been approached by, you know, big TV providers to do shows about real estate, and I'm like, okay, like let's narrow it down. What is it that you guys want to see exactly? Because if it comes to construction, and what we do is amazing, you know, it's really fun, and there's, you know, of course a drama side to it, as I was just explaining. But then they want to like get into my life, and I'm like, I'm not into that. You know what I mean?
It's
like
old school, Gina. It's old school. Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, again, like I'm a businesswoman, and that's what I want to do. Like what I do with my life, who I live with, and what I do for fun doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? You can see me out and take a couple of pictures, dinner with my friends, with my boo, whatever it is. You know, it doesn't matter. But there is a lot of real drama in real estate in LA, a lot, like endless. So I think that's something
people, for whatever reason, don't want the real stuff. They everyone's nosy and interested in the other stuff. And that's
I think that's, they would be interested in that, though.
Yeah.
I do think so. Yeah. I mean, because they know it. Like South LA, for example, like by USC, which, you know, one of the best universities in the world, is in South LA, which is incredible. I mean, I was like, wait, South LA, South Central, Compton, and you have USC. I mean, it's incredible how proximity to like all these, you know, not so good areas. That's where we're building all these, you know, affordable housing projects. And well, to me, that was amazing, by the way. Like, I don't know if like most people around the world knows that, but you know, if I didn't live in LA, like, I don't know if I would ever send any of my kids to USA. Just the location that is it in, like, I wouldn't.
Back to the thing about the HGTV, I'm not saying that people wouldn't be interested or reality TV or whatever in the construction end of it. The point that I'm making is this last weekend, and you may not follow the NFL at all, probably not, you know, not growing up, or maybe you do, I don't know. The big story from the weekend was the backup quarterback for the Bengals. His girlfriend had this like very risque white bodysuit on and this little fluffy hat. And that was like what was going a buzz on social media and like the different networks. Meanwhile, there's teams playing for the playoffs and all this stuff. And it's that kind of stuff that people are gravitating towards. So I think that's what you're up against with some of this stuff. And,
well, that's,
you know,
again, that's, so. Not, of course, not to go crazy into like any cultural, you know, political stuff. But yeah, I mean, it is true that again, I read those stories. That's great. That's fine. It's, you know, just to take your mind off. But when it comes to like the everyday, I also think that people are not informed. Like if they were to know all these things that happen throughout the city of LA,
that's nuts.
A lot of people are aware of them because they live in these areas and they know.
Yeah.
But when you are talking about Figueroa on 77th Street, everyone knows that's, you know, I mean, I don't know how to say it nicely, but that's like the hooker's corner. You know what I mean? Like that's not where you want to buy real estate unless you're building affordable house. Like, you know what I mean? So there are just like crazy stories that go into all of this. And you know, people know me in South LA too as the girl with the strawberry Porsche. I have like an orange Porsche, and like they know me like that. And it's incredible the amount of gangs that you have down there, and like all these things. Like it's just insane.
Your like, show's more for like HBO or something where it can get a little crazier, I think.
Listen, it can get really crazy. I mean, when I go down to some of these construction sites and I see this guy on a bicycle and he drives by, he's like, "Hey, B." I'm like, "Hey, what's up? Everything good today? Any problems?" I'm like, no, I'm good. Okay. Well, if you know you call me Blue. Okay, Blue. I'm like, okay, bye. Like, there's so many gangs. And they are nice to me. You know what I mean? Like, but this happens in every house, like the 77th Street, the 80. I mean, it's insane. This is not like the, you know, not like the old days. I'm not talking about the old days mafia. You know what I mean? That was something completely different. These are street gangs, and you just have them in every block. It's insane.
And that's why I don't live in LA. And that's why I live in St. Augustine, Florida.
Well, different, I guess, strokes for different folks. Young looking girl and they're nice, like,
all right. So folks listening right now, if they want to work with you, they have properties, et cetera, or maybe they're looking to break into multifamily in LA. What is the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
Reach out via email. You can also find my phone number on my Instagram as well. I have like a link tree. If you go on there and you click on there, you can, you know, access this, all my pages, Facebook, Twitter, all of that fun stuff. Again, the phone is always better. If I don't answer right away, just shoot me a text. I'm pretty, you know, with my turnaround response. And that's that.
And the handle is Barbara Isabel?
Barbara Isabel, one second.
R-E.
I think R-E. I think I changed it, yeah. Barbara Isabel R-E, like real estate.
We got it. All right, Gina, take us home.
Barbara Isabel, one of eight children. Her dad was an entrepreneur. She moved from beautiful Madrid, sipping espressos, going down
Gino
to South Africa. Yes. Well, I'm just assuming. Hanging out in Madrid and saying, I'm going to move to L.A. She moved to L.A. 8 years ago, go to college, to become a lawyer of all things. She becomes a lawyer. And I think it was might have been a little soul-sucking, met a little bit of, like, not what she wanted. And I think ultimately getting into real estate and working really hard and living the life of real estate and understanding and really diving down into why she's doing it. One of the reasons why is she is continuing the legacy of her father. And that's what it comes down to. The money's great. The lifestyle is great. But when you drill it down, I think all of us have to understand why we're doing something. It's not just real estate, because she could pick up and go into any other business and do the same thing. The hard work ethic, the ability to think outside the box, the ability to defer money coming in today and saying, hey, let's build a relationship. How do we create relationship, and how do I give you value, and how do you give me value? These are a lot of the things that her father taught her, and continuing the legacy through real estate is what she's going to leave this planet a better place, Jake.
Excellent. Barbara, thank you so much for your time today. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.